Donna Ashworth is a number one Sunday Times best-selling poet and author, and she's our guest on this episode of The Book Alchemist with me, Heather Sutty. Donna has a unique ability to help readers feel seen, comforted, and held through life's challenges. She wasn't always a poet. Let's get to know her and the books which have shaped her life. Donna, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me here. I'm ridiculously excited.
Not as much as I am. Gosh, you haven't always been a number one best-selling poet, have you?
No, definitely not. In fact, if we go back sort of 4 years ago, and with it being a leap year this year, it made me cast back to the last leap year. And I was just thinking, I didn't have any books then. Not only did I not have any books, I wasn't actively writing. I certainly wasn't writing for a living or doing anything remotely that might suggest that this is where the next 4 years would go. So 8 books in 4 years it's been. So it's been a real whirlwind from going just being me to being a best-selling poet. It's not something I ever planned.
Amazing. Amazing. Have you always been articulate with feelings?
Yes, I have. And I've had to, I don't know if I've always been articulate with feelings, but I've always had to work really hard to control mine. So from a very young age, I've had far too many thoughts on a daily basis, and all of the emotions in, you know, not just every hour, but sometimes every minute on a loop. Mm. I am somebody who experiences every hue of the rainbow consistently. And I think when you grow up like that, you feel very flawed and you feel very faulty. You feel like you should be handling everything better. You shouldn't be losing your cool. You shouldn't be loving everything the way that you love everything and, you know, finding the things that you find difficult, so difficult. Mm-hmm. So long story short, I had to find ways of managing my overthinking and my over-emotional self. And I think you've got two choices when you've got a brain like that. You have to find ways of sort of, one, accepting it and reprogramming it for your own inner peace, mm-hmm. or two, just, you know, having a life full of drama and hysteria. So I went for the first option and I've always worked hard at it.
You used to be a singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. Did you use that as a vehicle to manage your feelings and emotions, do you think?
Looking back, 100%. I mean, I was young at the time. I was sort of early 20s when I was really actively writing songs. So you don't think about it like that. But I knew, or I believed, that I had messages the world needed to hear. I remember thinking, you know, back then, we didn't have any internet. You couldn't go on social media and find an audience. You had to get on the radio.
Yeah.
You had to get chosen above everybody else. And I just remember thinking I might die if I never got to tell the world the messages that I believed were so very important. You know, the arrogance of youth. And I believed it with every might of my being. So it was a very difficult thing to let go of because I felt like it was everything to me at the time. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I realized that it wasn't happening, I had to find a way of getting over it and finding peace again. So I had to, as many of us have to do with many things in our life, I had to let it go. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ever think there would be another chance to do something quite similar, i.e. speak to the world. It sounds ridiculous, but we all have something to say, don't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's absolute testament and all power to you for achieving, you know, global success. And this is just the beginning because you've got more books on the way, haven't you?
I do. I've just finished one that will come out in September and I've been working on that for about a year. So since I finished writing my last book last spring, I've been working on this new book. So it's very difficult because I write poetry and quotes and small passages. I am sharing the ones that I wrote the year before for a year. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not sharing the ones that I'm writing right now, mm-hmm. which can be quite tricky because you really want to talk to people about what you're doing right now, what you're feeling right now. And luckily, I'm able to, the things that I wrote in Wild Hope are still completely identifiable. And, you know, every week changes in your life and you need something different. So luckily, they still fit. But I've been so excited to share the new ones. I can't wait to start doing that in the next few months. And then I'm going to be doing a children's poetry collection, which is going to be a sort of self-worth in disguise as fun poetry. And I'm really excited about that. And I have a journal coming out, which is going to include quite a lot of quotes and poetry and quite a lot of different things for a journal that I've not seen before. And I'm really excited about that because my plan, and maybe this is something you can help me with, is to involve people in it. So the things that they're writing, and if they, one, feel brave enough to share it with everybody else, or two, you know, feel open enough that they want to share it, then I would like to sort of hear what they've written that month, that day, whatever it is that's happening. So I'm looking forward to that. There's lots coming out that I'm excited about.
And you just signed a book deal to do more books, haven't you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Yeah. You started off being self-published, is that right?
Yeah. I wanted to bring out a book of pandemic poetry that I had written every day in the lockdown. And I thought I'd like to very quickly put these into a book so that when, because the lockdown was going to be a few months at first, do you remember? Mm-hmm. And when it started to lift in the summer, we thought this was it. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'll very quickly do this so that I've got something I can look back on. And if anybody else wants to buy it, can put it away in a box somewhere. And in 20 years, we'll go, wow, remember that? Mm-hmm. So I self-published because it seemed like the quickest way to do it. And then I realised how easy self-publishing is and that it's free and that there's no waste. They print to demand. So you're not, you know, worrying about having to get rid of a load of books and wasting paper and things like that. So I went on very quickly 4 months later to bring out a full collection of poetry for women, which is called To the Woman. And that to date has sold over about 100,000 copies, which is, I believe, is quite unusual for a self-published book. So I'm a big advocate of self-publishing if you want to very quickly get to a point where you can say, this is what I've got. And then maybe you can show that and that might help progress into publishing or whatever it is that you want to do. But you have that book then. There's much power in that, I think.
You've had accolades from the Sunday Times, you're a number one bestseller, you're recently featured in The Guardian, you know, you just have to Google you and there's so many articles. I mean, how do you feel being kind of responsible? And I know what your answer is going to be, but I'd like to ask you the question anyway. You know, you're kind of like responsible for this renaissance in poetry. You know, it's like 2023 was the biggest sales year ever for that genre. You know, do you feel part of it?
I do. And it's bizarre. I'm really pleased about it for a start because I think poetry has only been for a very small percentage of society until now. And it's not just me. There are many other, they call them Insta poets, which is a title that does not bother me in the slightest. I'm more than happy and grateful for any of these titles that you want to give me. I'll take it all. But it used to be people were afraid to share poetry in case they would be, you know, judged, criticised, it's not good enough. And we studied poetry in a way at school that made it very complicated. And I think for me, it's a bit like the Emperor's New Clothes, you know, if something is really difficult and complicated, it must be really good.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm not good enough.
It's not for
me. I'm not clever enough. Mm-hmm. And I set out not to write poetry. I set out on a very clear mission in my mind that I wanted to provide everybody with words that they could use, whether it's in a tricky situation, whether it's when they desperately need some sort of perspective shift themselves, or whether it's something really deep and meaningful when grief comes knocking and you do not know what to say, you're afraid you might say the wrong things. I wanted to provide some simple messaging that would be really useful. And I didn't set out to change poetry. I didn't even really think of it as poetry in the beginning. I didn't consider what type of poem I was writing or if it was a poem or if it was prose or a quote. It was very much message driven. So I had something I wanted to say to somebody else. And if they liked that, if they connected with it, then that was a successful poem or a successful quote. So I think we've been afraid of being simple, and so simple can't be good. But if you read something simple and it gives you goosebumps from head to toe, changes the very thing that you're facing right now in your life and gives you what you need to go on, then that's powerful. Simple can be really, really powerful. So I am pleased that poetry is changing and moving with the times. We read differently now, so of course poetry should present itself differently.
It's funny, I had this conversation with another podcast guest recently about novellas versus novels, and there's an inverted snobbery that a novella is perceived not as well as a novel, when in actual fact, it's more challenging to be powerful with less than more.
I think so. I mean, I would much rather write 4 pages to make sure I got my point across. But I am fully aware that with the way that we read at the moment and the way that, you know, this popcorn brain that we all have, when you see a short passage appear in front of you, your brain automatically resonates with it. That's a poem or a quote. You don't know you're thinking that, but you're identifying it. You know you're ready to receive something a bit emotional. So you go into a different place in your mind in that moment, and that's all happening subconsciously. So there is like a little window there of vulnerability that you can get through all the sort of daily to and fro and busyness and get straight to the soul. So you have to be short, and you have to present it in a way that's recognisable so that you can get that window into somebody's psyche or heart or soul. And it's not easy to sum it all up. It's short and sweet. You have to discard a lot of lines of text that might have, you know, given much more to what you were trying to say. So I'm completely with you. To be simple and to be, to put things into a neat little package, you first have to go through an awful lot and sum it up. And that can be a skill in itself.
I absolutely take my hat off to you, because I discovered you because I was gifted a copy of your book, and then I followed you on Instagram, and then, you know, I've been probably liking all your posts, so apologies for all the notifications.
Oh, no, I love that. I never need to apologise.
But the thing that I love about you is that you just get it. Like, you're clearly a highly sensitive person and deeply empathetic, and I just love what you do. And I think you weren't meant to be a singer-songwriter. You weren't meant to be a pop star. You were absolutely meant to do this.
I'm so pleased that you think so. And also, I had to work really hard at the singing. The voice didn't come naturally to me. The lyrics were the thing that I found easy. It was natural. It came, you know, quite organically. Mm-hmm. So it is a joy not to have to sort of worry about how my voice sounds whether I've hit the notes right. Because perfection for me is really difficult. And if you're a recovering perfectionist, mm-hmm. like I am, and so many other women my age, you're telling me that you are as well. Because we were...
not a very good one.
Well, you know, it's one of these things that once you start unraveling it, takes on a wee mind of its own and unravels on a daily basis, whether you like it or not. But it was drummed into us that we had to be perfect. We had to be better. But we were also women. So if you wanted to get into any kind of an industry, you had to be ready. You had to be ready for the daily onslaught, for the misogyny, for the, you know, the unfair treatment, for the unequal, all of it. So you were really, you built yourself up in quite a defensive manner, didn't you? And you were ready to fight every single day. And so you had to be perfect, because criticism hit us much more deeply because we were women. And, you know, if you cried or showed any emotion, it was almost like, haha, I knew that would happen. Yeah. Oh, here she goes again, you know. What mood are we going to get today? You were made to feel less than for being an emotional person. And I'm now a huge believer in you can be that emotional person. You can feel absolutely everything. And you can still be brilliant. You can still be reliable. You can still be completely exemplary in your field, whatever that is. And crying, what should not take away from any of that. You know, we're in a world that is horrific sometimes. If you're not crying, if you're not feeling the pain of that, what is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. Why are we hiding that? So I really want to keep pushing that narrative forward that we can feel absolutely everything and show it and not be seen as lesser than because of that. In fact, if anything, it should be the opposite. To be able to process all those emotions all of the time is quite a skill, takes a lot of work. And we are the strongest people rather than the weakest because, you know, we go through a myriad of emotions. Oh, you've got a little tear in your eye there. I want to come over and give you a cuddle, but I can't reach you. So, yes.
But, you know, yes, I mean, that's it. And I think, you know, your words have such powerful, deep, comforting meaning to people when they really need it.
I hope that to be true. And what I'm determined to do is, somebody described my poetry the other day as relentlessly positive. And I sat with that for a little while and then I thought, actually, that's brilliant because I'm funny about positivity. Positivity for me was drummed into me that just meant that you just went, yay, here I am, show up, smile on it, get on with it. And I don't believe in that. In order to find some positivity, you have to go into the negativity. You have to really look at it and analyse it and say, what is the why here? Why is this happening? Why do I feel like that? What is this pain? Get it all up, you know, the uncomfortable stuff. And 10 times out of 10, you're far better for having got that pain up, had the cry, felt the horrible feelings, let them consume you. And then you can find the grain of hope. And you must. You can't stay there in that place. You have to come back out of it. You find the grain of hope. You find the grain of comfort. Humour, if you can find it, is there's nothing more powerful than that once you've been down and deep in the pain. So I try and make sure that every little poem or quote has understanding in it first. And then, you know, the grain of hope, then the grain of comfort. I always say, if you go and visit a friend who's suffering, you do not leave that friend, no matter what you've got lined up for the day or the night or how late you are. You don't leave until you've seen a chink of hope and comfort there that you've brought. You don't leave her until you've seen that something is, she's coming back up out of that place just for a moment. You've given her the comfort and then you know you can go and come back again. Obviously, you don't just go and leave, but that's what I'm trying to do with each poem.
You've done it beautifully on social media.
Thank you.
So tell me, you've got something like 1.5 million fans on Facebook and your Instagram account is growing and growing and growing. You've had a few celebrity fans on Instagram, haven't you?
Yes. And I love Instagram for, we were just saying before we started, that you can talk to anybody there. And if you resonate with somebody and they resonate with what you're doing, you can be instantly connected. And it doesn't matter who they are or what they are doing. You know, if that spark of connection exists, you can cut across all the things that keep us apart in real life. And that's what I love about it. You and I would not be talking if we hadn't have sort of looked at what one another is doing and waved like we did when we saw each other and going, oh, I like you. You're for me. And what I have found is that celebrity women, because it is mostly women that I've connected with, are exactly the same. You know, they are just like us and they might, you know, seem to be living this wonderful, successful existence, and they are, but they're just normal people and they like people in the same way that we like people, and they support and help people for no reason most of the time, other than they think it's worthy or they think there's a connection there. The women supporting women thing that did become a bit of a, it was overused for quite a while, I think, in a sort of, you know, women come together for the sake of it way, which is great because it can never be a bad thing. But I've seen it in daily life. It's actually true. When women come together in the way that they do, there is absolutely nothing that they cannot achieve just by deciding that they will support one another and make it happen. And it gives me shivers when I see it. I see it all the time on social media. I see charities coming together. I see women deciding to change something and then just doing it because they realise that together they're super powerful. And I've found that women have helped me by sharing my words, mm-hmm. by supporting me, by constantly helping me work through anything that might hold me back so I can keep going. For no reason other than they just want to. They just see something there. It's amazing and I'm so grateful. I wouldn't be sitting here right now if it hadn't been for the thousands and thousands of women that decided to share my words and put me up there.
I love that you've, you know, really have rejuvenated the poetry market, because it's funny, I used to work with a woman called Kat, and Kat used to buy me poetry books, and I'd never really been into poetry. Like, I remember when I was in my teens, I came across this book called A Dancing Star,
okay,
by Eileen Campbell. So okay. it's at least 30 years old.
Okay.
And I loved that. And that was a kind of book that I kept by my bedside. But I was never into poetry purely because I had this kind of imposter syndrome thing that I thought, it's too clever for me.
We all did.
And, you know, I've got a stack of books in my kitchen and there's a poetry book that Kat got me. But I just can't get into it because it's too intellectual.
Yeah.
And what I love about what you're doing is that it's simply beautiful.
Thank you. It's such a compliment. And I'm not writing poetry for people who like poetry. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not excluding them. Uh-huh. If they enjoy my poetry, I'm delighted. But I'm writing poetry for people who don't like poetry, people who I know use words every day to heal other people and share and help. I see them doing it, but they don't know it's poetry, or they don't realise what they're doing. They're just doing what they do every day, which is being kind, being a good friend, being a good, you know, family member, trying in every way, shape possible to bring kindness or bring comfort. I see them doing it and I wanted to give them words to use to help them do that. So I never set out to write poetry for poets or, you know, poetry lovers particularly. I just want you to come up with words that would be instantly impactful. So I didn't want you to sort of read three verses before you decided if this was for you. I wanted you to know immediately if this was for you in the first line. And that was really deliberate from the get-go. It had to communicate quickly to you in the first line or you weren't going to read it. Mm-hmm. And most of the books that I've sold have been bought by people who have never bought a poetry book before.
Yeah. And that's amazing.
And I'm really proud of that. Yeah. And aside from that knowledge, that's all that I care about. I've never looked at it any other way. There was an article about us Insta poets, and at the very end of the article, a very well-known poet said that these Insta poets actually have, many of them have zero literary worth whatsoever. Now, what a way to suppress an entire generation of budding creative writers. And also, who decides what has literary worth? Who decides? Who's in charge? If you read something and it gives you the goosies and makes you change the way that you're thinking in that moment, there is the worth.
Absolutely.
Where else does this worth come from?
Yeah.
So that gets me quite angrily passionate about continuing with my very simple mission. That has kind of given me a whole new why, because people will be put off even trying with comments like that from people who are in positions of poetic power.
Perceived.
You'll never hear that from me.
Yeah.
You will always hear, you know, people will send me poems and say, yes, it's a good poem. And to me, there is not really such a thing as a good or a bad poem. If you're trying to rhyme and you fail, I suppose, you know, that's not hit the mark as a rhyming poem. Aside from that, there's very little that you can do if somebody finds something in it. There's very little that you can do wrong. If you've written from the heart and you've written from the soul, then that is a little jewel of a message, if you ask me.
I actually love the tag Insta poet.
Yeah,
because
me too.
Does exactly what it says on the tin, and it's, as you mentioned earlier, it's completely moved with the times, because we don't have the mental capacity or brain bandwidth to sit and, you know, digest 5 or 6, 7, 8 verses of poetry. I love when you do your videos on Facebook. Do you ever have days where you're just not feeling it,
or all the time. You will see me post videos of myself in succession for maybe 2 weeks, and then you won't see any for 2 months.
Right.
And you will just see text. And when I feel it, when I feel like I can show up, you know, physically and be on camera, I will do as many as I can in that moment. But I will always share every day text, because it's the words that people connect with. I only put the videos of myself reading them because I know that a lot of people enjoy that element of it. And a lot of people find that's the way they connect best. So I will continue to try and do that. But for me, it's all about the words. And if I write it down and I put it in a way that you can screenshot it or share it, then it becomes of much more use to you than just, you know, if it's great, you can share a reel and you can send it, but you can do so much more with the words. So there are, I always feel the writing, that never stops, but I don't always feel like I want anybody to look at me. In fact, I've just written a poem about how I'm an attention seeker, but only when I'm up for it, only when, you know, my capacity allows. There can be weeks that go past where I don't want anybody to look at me. Really? Or... And I think that's all right. You don't have to be one or the other.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's very hard to be on all the time. I mean,
I wouldn't be able to do it.
I'm an introverted extrovert.
I am. I say that all the time.
And I love people. But oh my gosh, I can only do
so much.
Big socialising things every now and again, because
yeah.
I find it really draining. Sometimes I find it uplifting, but I think, you know, if you're attuned people's emotions, it's like, you know, I have to watch what I read news wise and what I watch,
same,
because I kind of soak it up and I know that it's not good for me. So
yeah,
that's interesting that you have days where you're not always.
I think you'll like this poem. It's called Happy Stay at Homer, and it's about exactly that. I can go out and I can do great things in terms of going into huge rooms full of people and being really on and really engaging and really enjoying it, loving it. But I can't do that all the time. I have to give myself a couple of days at least afterwards for the social hangover.
Yeah.
And it's a very real thing. And it doesn't make you flawed or weak. Or it's, I used to think, God, how are some people doing it every day? I must be faulty. And, you know, you're not faulty. That's just the way that you are wired. And the more that you understand yourself and let yourself off the hook,
mm-hmm.
it's perfectly fine to mm-hmm. be like that. I'm neither extrovert nor introvert. But I can be a bit of both in every single day. I can be completely fine in the morning to to socialise and do, and then in the afternoon, you know, I can shut down.
Yeah.
And that's fine, because when you take out the panic or the shame from all of these things, all you're left with is peace and understanding, and yeah. that, you know, I know how this goes and I can roll with it.
Yeah.
And I'll wait until... And you can also set yourself goals. Like, I look at my diary and I think, okay, there are 4 big events there. I am not booking in anything that makes me go out into big crowds or, you know, big stressful situations in between them, because I know that's going to set me up for a mini breakdown, you know, for a complete overwhelm. And so you can plan a lot better once you get past the trying to be like everybody else. You've got to plan for you, and everybody's completely different, and we have to accept how people... I think if you're honest... You know, and say, I'm not going to lie to you. I can feel the overwhelm coming for me right now.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say no to that if that's okay, because I don't want to let you down. If we could all be honest like that, it would make things a lot easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about the books that you have by your bedside, and I'll give you some thinking time. I'll tell you which ones I've got in my cabinet. So I've got 3 drawers.
Yep.
And in there I have one of your books.
Ooh.
I have lots of Louise Hay
mm-hmm.
books.
Lots Adore of Louise Hay.
Marianne Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other one? Yes, but it's mostly Marianne Williamson and Louise Hay. And to me, you're kind of like the Scottish Louise Hay, albeit 50 years younger.
Best thing you could say to me. It really is. Louise Hay saved my life, and that is not me being overdramatic, which I can very much be a lot. I studied Louise Hay's books from the age of sort of 17 all the way through my younger adult years, because my mental health, you know, went completely out of control. I was terribly anorexic. Back then, nobody knew what to do for that or how to talk about it. And there was no other examples of people living with it or, you know, things that you could... The only thing you ever heard about anorexia back then was when somebody died.
Yeah, like Lena Savarone. Mm-hmm.
You know, I clung to Louise Hay because I realised that my perfectionist brain, which had done me a lot of good growing up because I was, you know, a really good student, lots of perfect scores and lots of accolades and at school. I got the main part in all of the school shows. I had great exam results, but the problem was that was all coming at a cost to my mental health because I couldn't fail. Didn't know how to fail, didn't know how to handle getting it wrong. I didn't know how to handle not being chosen. So Louise Hay was just, I used to sit and write out the affirmations pages and pages and pages until I reprogrammed everything within my mind. So a lot of her work must be coming through mine. I can't see that it wouldn't be because she formed such a huge part of my emotional growth. But I don't have any of her books now. And I think that's possibly because they live within me. Yeah. They're cell bound now, you know, they're part of my bloodstream. But I adore her. So that's a really huge compliment that you can give me. By my bedside at the moment, I've got the books that I'm trying to read. And I say trying to read. And there's a very good reason why I write the way that I write in short bursts. I find it really difficult to sit down and read an entire book. I get sidetracked, I get distracted, there seems to be no time. I can't get into a period where I can devote my focus to it because life comes calling, doesn't it? There's so much to do. So that's why I write a page at a time because I think you can do that, can't you? You can do a page, you can take it in. That's why my books are open at any page, take the message. But I'm trying very much to read The Goddess Path by Kirsty Gallagher at the moment. I don't know if you're familiar.
Kirsty Gallagher, the broadcaster?
No, there are two. And the Kirsty Gallagher that I'm reading at the moment is a goddess expert.
Ooh.
Who even knew it was a thing?
It is a thing. I'm into it.
And it's fascinating. And so far, I'm loving it. I'm just trying. I've made a little reading area away from my office so that I can go there and not be distracted by work. But I'm not going to lie. I'd love to do a lot more reading than I do. I've just finished Bryony Gordon's Mad Woman. Have you read that?
How did you find that?
I love Bryony Gordon. I just think she's a brave woman.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for her and everything she's ever written. I loved it because I resonated so much with it, having, you know, lived with eating disorders for a huge part of my life and the sort of mental health chatter and the perception of that in society. So I loved it.
I've read Glorious Rock Bottom by her.
Yeah, I've not read that one.
Because I decided to give up alcohol.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm nearly a year next month.
Wow, amazing. Well, I'm 12.
Wow, 12 years.
Yeah, honestly, one of the best decisions I ever made.
I totally understand that already. Well done.
And thank you in every sense. But I love Bryony as well. I could chat to you all day.
Oh, I know, me too.
I'm so pleased you came on the podcast. I'm so pleased that we connected on Instagram.
Me.
And will you please come and do a Bookface event?
Absolutely. I can't wait. It's happening. It's done. It's a given.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Donna.
Thank you, Heather.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please take 30 seconds to rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps. New episodes drop every Thursday. Thanks so much for listening.